first-degree murder remains were discovered of Monica Jack.
First-degree murder and the death of 12-year-old Monica Jack for justice.
This is episode 17, The Youngest Victim of the Highway of Tears, in the Woke Settler podcast series. This episode is produced, written, and spoken by Isabel Cavadoy. So I wanted to start off this podcast episode by telling a quick little story about my sister and I when we were younger. And this story was probably from when we were around the ages of 5 and 7, me being 7, being 2 years older, and my younger sister, Chloe, being 5 and just learning how to ride a bike. So I asked my mom if my sister and I could ride our bikes around the court, because we used to live in a little like suburban court area. And before we went outside, my mom was like, make sure, you know, your sister doesn't fall down. Make sure Chloe doesn't hurt herself. Make sure she actually knows how to ride a bike. Make sure she's wearing her helmet. Just like that whole watch your little sister speech that like the older sibling always seems to get. So we're going outside and like we're putting on our helmets and stuff, and we're literally just riding around in circles in this court at like dawn. And it was so random, but that's like what little kids do. And I guess the wheel of her bike might have gotten caught on a tree branch or something, but all of a sudden I hear behind me like a crash, and then I hear her scream and I hear her start to cry, and she's like laying on the ground with the bike on top of her, and there's blood everywhere, and she's screaming and she's crying and she's yelling. And even my neighbors like came out of their house to see what happened, and I run over to her and I'm like, oh my god, like what happened, right? And she's just crying and whatever. So I was like, okay, we need to like get you back in the house. So I put her on my back and I pick up the two bikes, one in each hand, and I'm like wheeling these two bikes beside me with my sister on my back. And I go into the house and I'm like, my sister's crying, my mom's trying to clean up our cut, and I'm over here crying too because I felt responsible, because I had one rule, and that was to watch my sister and make sure that she didn't hurt herself and make sure that nothing, you know, nothing bad happened. And here she is, blood all over our kitchen. And it was just, I just remember sitting there and feeling responsible, and I kept asking the same question, like, what if I had paid more attention? What if she had to been in front of me instead of me being behind her? And I was just in a situation where I kept asking these what if questions. So now imagine that you're on a bike ride with a friend, or a friend like family member, and you're around the same age. This is the first time your parents let you go out by yourselves, and you're like super excited for it. So what happens if you get hurt, or they get hurt, and you fall, or they fall? There's blood, there's crying, there's screaming. You know, how would you feel? Would you feel guilty? Would you feel responsible? Or what about you're on a bike ride and they get hurt once you part ways, and you don't hear about it until later from a family member or their parents or like mutual friends? Would you feel responsible, or would you feel as if you could have prevented the situation entirely if you had been there? So those are some questions Debbie John continues to ask herself even 40 plus years later. So the beginning of this story that I'm about to tell you starts off in Merritt, BC, which is a small town near Nakota Lake. This is about Debbie John and her cousin, who was close in age, Monica Jack, more so about Monica Jack. This is a solved murder case, and it starts off with two young girls going on a bike ride and heading home after going to the shopping center. Debbie had actually said, quote, it was going to be a good day, we had money to go shopping, quote, to the police after the incident. So Monica and Debbie, they parted ways when they were closer to Debbie's house, like they normally do. This town is quiet, and it's right next to the heart of Nakota Lake. It's built around Highway 16. It's a small town that is highly influenced by Indigenous culture, which is placed on the west side of British Columbia. Highway 16, also known as the Highway of Tears, is a long road that runs through the main towns of Prince Rupert and Prince George. This highway has been the location of many murders and disappearances of Indigenous women since the early 1970s. So Monica's parents, more so her mom, was a little bit hesitant about letting her go on a bike ride, but she did agree. And CBC actually made an interactive website dedicated to 308 Indigenous women who have gone missing or who have been murdered around Canada. And this is where I stumbled upon Monica Jack's case, which is one of the few cases that have actually been solved. What initially piqued my interest was probably her age, being 12 of the time of her going missing. And being so young, you know, she never got to celebrate any other birthdays or experience high school, her first love, or going away to college like most of us probably will. When I was looking into Monica and her background, I came across a couple of things. She was the third youngest child to her mother, Madeline Linero, and her father, Philip Swackham. She lived with her mother, who worked as a social worker, and siblings. She also visited her father, who owned a ranch, because she enjoyed being with the horses. From a lot of the research that I did, Monica was talked about very highly, and she was well liked and loved within her community. This is a quote from Liz Cross, her younger sister. She said, quote, "Monica was beautiful, cool, and sweet. She wore bell bottoms," quote. She also said, quote, "She always took care of me. She never let anybody hurt me," quote. I also found a small quote from Linero, her mother, which she said during a recent interview, quote, "She had already decided what she wanted to be when she grew up. She wanted to be a social worker and worked with kids," quote. So it seemed as though Monica was a very intelligent girl who enjoyed school from a lot of the interviews that I listened to. But although Monica's family didn't really seem to have a lot of money, she did have a healthy relationship with her family, and she shared multiple memories with her siblings, like swimming in the lake, hiking up the mountains, and picnics. Monica Jack was last seen May 6th, 1978, while riding her bike along Highway 16. Her mother, Linero, said, "We didn't know what to think, and we called the cops right away. They came out pretty fast. They got boats, and they searched the lake. Then we started looking and looking." Family members were actually the ones who found her bike thrown off the side of the road the following day. During this grieving process for Linero, she said, "I have heard people say her daughter probably just ran away. People don't steal Indian kids. You don't ever get over that." And it's true. This probably crushed her hope and others, like her family members, who were once motivated to find Monica, and it definitely kept them from continuing to search. It wasn't until 17 years after Monica's disappearance in June 1995 when a group of forestry workers found her remains 20 kilometers from where her bike was left, according to the Vancouver Sun. It wasn't until February 1996 that the remains were confirmed to be Monica's through DNA testing. Monica's mom had also said, "I guess the worst part of it, really, was the not knowing. We think of ourselves over the 18 years, and we hear of people who disappear, and we know how the families feel, because we have been through the same. The hurt never stops." Hearing about Monica's disappearance through the eyes of her mother, as well as her sisters, really made me feel for both her and her family. I myself will live with my mom and my sister, Chloe, who I previously talked about, and it would completely crush me if my sister ever went missing and have the police just give up on finding her because of her race, like what happened with Monica. I couldn't even imagine the void and the feeling like there's almost a light missing from your life simply because, you know, someone who you spent days with and hours with just goes missing, and it seems as though the police aren't even worried about it. They're not even trying to figure out what had happened to them.
In BC Supreme Court, a jury returned a verdict of guilty against Gary Handlin in the 1978 death of Monica Jack. His sentencing was adjourned till January the 28th so that victims' impact statements can be prepared to be presented before the court.
Okay, so going into the actual logistics of the trial and the case became quite confusing for me, someone who doesn't know a lot about court rules or how that system really works. What I did sort of understand is that it seemed as though Hamblin was originally brought into question in 2014 as a suspect officially. However, they didn't really seem to have enough evidence to convict him of anything. So there was a police operation known as the Mr. Big Undercover Operation, where some police officers pretended to be his friend or work with him and try and see if they could get him to confess to the murder of Monica Jack in 1978, which he did. So this is where I'm gonna play that clip of him actually confessing to the murder of Monica Jack. So I'm going to come in and speak and repeat what Gary Hamblin had said while the detective is talking. The audio recording of this is very fuzzy and a little bit difficult to understand what is being said. So I'm just going to repeat it so that it's very clear what Gary is saying and how he confessed to the murder of Monica. What Gary had just said is that he remembers picking up a girl once and they had sex, and he remembers himself losing it, is how he described it, and he can't recall if he had strangled her or not. Next, the detective will ask him around where he had picked up that girl. In that clip, it was a little bit difficult to hear, but Hamblin had said that he owned an interior near the Merritt area, which is why he would have been on Highway 16. While Hamblin was in court, his lawyers had actually made a pretty strategic move regarding the recording that I had just played. They actually argued that Hamblin was manipulated by the police and that it was a false confession he felt pressured to make, according to the Vancouver Sun newspaper. But that argument doesn't really make a lot of sense to me, just because I watched the actual like video recording of that, and the way his body language seemed so comfortable and not as if he felt pressured or as if he was being manipulated. Although it was an undercover investigation, it wasn't, like, I didn't really see any manipulating happening. The officer was asking him questions and Hamblin was being pretty cooperative with answering. However, there were times where he would get a little bit defensive and aggressive by simply saying that he doesn't know, he doesn't remember, probably, like, you know, those sort of answers. And that was a little bit defensive, but aside from that, it didn't seem like he was, like, it was a false confession. It seemed very genuine, and he had known a couple things about Monica that the police didn't know from their investigations earlier on. So one of the things that the jury actually didn't hear in court was that Gary Hamblin had a pretty long list of sexual violence going back to 1963 on record. According to CBC News, his record was excluded in court because it could have been used as evidence to why he'd be more likely to have killed Monica Jack. I actually looked into that rule, and according to a website called Free Advice on Criminal Law, it could open a door to further convictions in summary, but of course there are always loopholes. Gary Hamblin and Monica Jack's case was not a loophole in that area. However, Gary Hamblin was eventually convicted of the murder of Monica Jack 40 years later in 2019. After the trial, her mother, Madeline Lanero, who I previously talked about a little bit, she actually spoke out on the situation, and I'm gonna play a clip from that.
We waited a long time for this. And we didn't think we could get to that point. Honestly, there seemed like no end. You know, the ups and downs. Sometimes too many downs, no many ups is life. And life would be different if we didn't come in, if anything didn't happen to our family.
How important is it?
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of the Woke Settler podcast series. I wanted to end off on a more positive note from those words from Madeline Lanero, speaking about moving on and just continuing to carry on even though some bad things might happen. So take that to take that and apply it to your own life. And hopefully this story brought a little bit of insight about the Indigenous women who have either been abducted or murdered along the Highway of Tears, also known as Highway 16. This is a real story, and there are many, many more. Like I said before, CBC has made a really awesome interactive website where you can explore 308 other Indigenous women who have had similar experiences all around Canada, not just in the BC area, which is really interesting, and it adds a little bit of attention, which is totally deserved, to these women. Because, you know, if a Caucasian woman were to have gone missing or were to have been abducted, I'm positive that there would be no stopping until the police find where she is or what had happened to her. But just because Monica Jack was Indigenous, or any of the other women who are on that website or on that list, just because of their race, it seems as though their case just isn't as important, and it's kind of just brushed to the side and is kind of forgotten about. So it was really cool to see and to learn about that, even though it was 40 years later, someone was eventually convicted with the murder, which serves them right. So anyways, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and thank you so much for watching.